Many of us are here because we know the experience of living with migraine. But how exactly do we understand what migraine is? It's easy to think of migraine as a condition of the brain. After all, many of the symptoms seem to start there. But science tells us a bigger story. Migraine can involve the whole body, including the vascular system, hormones, the immune system, and the gut. To help us explore this broader view of migraine as a systemic disease, we're joined by Dr. Vince Martin, Director of the Headache and Facial Pain Center at the University of Cincinnati Gardner Neuroscience Institute. He'll guide us through what's really happening in the brain and the body during migraine, why it so often occurs with other conditions, and what this evolving science means for those living with migraine today. Dr. Martin, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
A pleasure to be here.
So firstly, I'd love to understand what this means as a systemic disease. What's the definition of a systemic disease?
So a systemic disease is a disease that affects other organ systems or the entire body. So there's this interplay between the disease and the rest of the body. I wanted to kind of go over like what are some of the old theories of migraine, because many patients and persons with migraine have actually already have heard of them. Like the first, you know, thing about migraine in terms of like what was causing a migraine was it used to be thought to be a vascular disease. So during an aura, which is usually where you get neurologic symptoms that precede a migraine, things like visual symptoms, flashing lights, zigzaggy lines, weakness or numbness on one side of your body. In the past, that was thought to be due to a constriction of an artery. And then the headache phase, which would occur after that, which is where usually you got your one-sided headache that throbbed and pulsated and got the nausea and sensitivity light noise, was thought to be due to a vasoconstriction. And that was the prevailing theory. But some new theories now suggest that it's probably a lot more than that, some of the prevailing genetic studies that have been recently done.
Yeah, interesting. So it's come a long way from understanding it as a vascular condition to where we understand it now. So how is it, I guess, different from understanding? Some people may just understand migraine as a brain disorder or a brain issue. How is it this understanding different from that?
Well, migraine has to involve the brain because the perception of pain in the head involves the brain. Currently, most neurologists and most headache doctors would tell you that migraine is a neuronal disease. And the data behind that was a lot of the early genetic studies of rare forms of migraine. There's one called familial hemiplegic migraine, which is where people get, as part of their aura, they get weak on one side of their body. They found very specific mutations in genes of different calcium and neuronal channels, or like little pores in nerve cells that alter the ions in the neurons. So it would be things like sodium and calcium and so forth. So in that instance, it was thought, well, migraine, all of it must be a neuronal disease. And then later they did some more genetic studies on more common variants, because that rare form of migraine with paralysis is not your common migraine. That's extremely rare. What they found was that most of the gene mutations early on were either involving nerve cells or the vasculature. So like there were gene mutations causing abnormalities of the blood vessels that go to the brain. So then the understanding evolved from this concept of migraine being a neurologic disease to a neurovascular disease. So one that could be neuronal or it could be vascular. But most recent studies have shown that there probably are other explanations for migraine as well.
I have a question that's come from our community. Miranda and Karen from our community have asked, what's actually happening in the brain and body when migraine occurs?
Well, during a migraine attack, the trigeminal nerve becomes activated. So the trigeminal nerve is the main sensory nerve of the head, and there's three divisions. There's the ophthalmic, there's the maxillary and mandibular branch. So there's three different divisions. And during a migraine attack, that nerve becomes activated. And when it becomes activated, it releases a protein called CGRP, calcitonin-gene-related peptide. And then that peptide, that little protein, binds to other nerve cells and blood vessels as part of a cascade of events that occur with migraine. And that's our current understanding. And many of the newer therapies that we have that have come out over the last 7 years basically either bind specifically to that protein or bind to the receptor that place on cells or on blood vessels where the protein tends to bind to block it. So a lot of the newer therapies kind of block this whole process. So that part is a neuronal, and it also has a vascular component when you think of the cause of migraine. So
I'd love to move on to talking about some of the causes and comorbidities that occur with migraine. What do we know about what causes migraine?
Migraine is associated with a variety of other illnesses. Depression is more common in patients with migraine. Anxiety is more common. Immune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis and lupus are more common. And vascular diseases are more common in migraine. And pain disorders, things like neck pain, low back pain, fibromyalgia, all these disorders. In the past, no one has really understood why that actually occurs. I think a lot of the headache doctors are kind of like, yeah, that makes sense. Migraine's the center of the universe. But the reality is there has to be a reason why these diseases are overrepresented in persons with migraine. And I think many people in the audience will often have these different diseases. But there are very specific reasons why these diseases are more common. And there's some more recent studies that are called Mendelian randomization studies. And these have come out over the last 3 or 4 years. It's just kind of flooded this. But the concept is that they'll find a disease, and then they'll identify the gene mutations associated with that disease. And then they'll, in a given population, and then they have to actually define who has migraine in that population. And because the genes were randomly distributed between individuals, it decreases a lot of the bias that can occur in studies. There's something called confounding, which is there could be other factors that might explain it rather than a cause and effect. But it allows you to actually assign a causative effect to a given disease for migraine. And what they found is that there are lots of diseases that are associated with the development of migraine. So things like, one of the strongest ones is depression. Certain kinds of thyroid disease, high thyroid and low thyroid disease were associated with that. Certain GI disorders, things like celiac disease was associated with aura. And even peptic ulcer disease, so ulcers of your stomach were associated with migraine. And then some of the diseases of blood clotting. So some of these are very specific for migraine with or without aura.
How are they able to sort of extract that out? Because I know people in our community might understand that migraine can co-occur with lots of conditions, but this is a step further saying that there's a causative effect. How are they able to find that?
Well, because in these Mendelian randomization studies, because the genes are assigned randomly to different people, they rule out the possibility of other factors, you know, because all the other factors are going to be randomly distributed, at least theoretically, in the population as well. So it allows to assign a causative effect because of the randomization of these genes to individuals at birth. So it's a really fascinating concept.
What are these diseases that can have a causative effect that were found in this study?
Things like deep venous thrombosis. So if that was found to be causative. Lupus was found to be causative for attacks of migraine with aura. Peptic ulcer disease was found to be causative for attacks of migraine without aura. And depression was found to be causative for attacks of migraine overall as well. So those are the common ones. There were other ones as well, but those are, and then also high thyroid, hyperthyroidism, low thyroid, hypothyroidism were also found to be causative for migraine as well. And then there are other things too, like obstructive sleep apnea. There was one study that suggested that was positive, vitamin D deficiency. So these new studies are really changing the way that we think about migraine as being, it can be a neurologic disease. It is a neurologic disease, but the cause could either be neurologic or it could be vascular, or in some instances, it could be from other illnesses. That latter part is totally novel. This is something completely new. And I think it makes sense to patients too that might have other disorders and want to know how they interrelate with migraine.
What do we know about what causes migraine in relation to this new research that's come out?
It is very possible that, say take clotting disorders. We talked about that as a disease that might trigger attacks of aura. It's now thought that sometimes that there can be tiny little blood clots, you know, that go up into the brain and actually trigger attacks of aura in some patients. So that's one mechanism. And then a lot of these inflammatory diseases, they release different proteins called cytokines from as part of the disease. And it's thought that this inflammatory process, which release of these inflammatory proteins, can actually trigger attacks in given individuals. And then in some cases, it's possible there could be some shared genetics. So the genes of one disorder could actually predispose to, like, say, for depression. You know, maybe the genes that produce depression also, you know, produce or cause migraines. So there could be some combined genetic effect. Those are just some things. If they've got obstructive sleep apnea, which is where you stop breathing at night, it's possible that the low, you know, oxygen levels that occur recurrently over time could produce migraine-like headaches. So there's a variety of different, you know, mechanisms, and it probably varies by the disease. Thyroid hormones, both high and low, can have neurologic effects as well. So in some of these things, we don't know the exact mechanisms. We just know that they probably are causative in some individuals. And I don't want people to think that every migraine is triggered by another illness, because there could be neuronal genetic causes, neuronal vascular causes, and there could be other diseases that all trigger or all cause migraine.
Would some of these conditions share some similarities with migraine? Do we know what's similar or what's sort of happening with these comorbidities?
They would share things in the sense that they may be similar type illnesses that may have, you know, intermittent, you know, worsenings and fluctuations in disease activity and so forth. Probably the one that might closely resemble migraine would be depression, which commonly occurs in migraine patients, is that they're both, you know, neurologic disorders with paroxysmal worsenings and so forth. But I'm not sure that there's a vast similarity between a lot of the diseases I've mentioned and migraine.
So you mentioned genetics as a causal factor when it comes to migraine. How much of migraine is caused by genetics?
Only about half. So only about half of migraine can explain the presence or absence of migraine in a given individual, which means there also are probably environmental factors that play a role. So there could be, like, maybe you never had a history of migraine and you take a blow to the head and you develop something called post-traumatic headaches that have migraine characteristics. So if you saw a headache doctor, they would probably say that you have migraine, but the reality was that you probably had post-traumatic headaches that led to migraine-like headaches. So I think this concept that a migraine attack may not always be the end game, you know, which is kind of like what the headache community currently thinks. It may just be a way the brain responds to many different things. It could be genetic. There could be genetic causes. There could be other diseases associated with it. Genes of blood vessels can cause it. And even environmental factors could play a role too, like head trauma and other environmental factors. Who knows? Maybe air pollution and other environmental factors could trigger migraine or headaches that have migraine characteristics. So it's looking at migraine in a much more broad sense than what we've ever looked at before.
Fascinating. And do you have anything else you'd like to share about what genetic studies tell us about migraine?
I think those are probably the big things, but one thing I would like to also cover with the audience is the difference between a cause and a trigger, because patients often get that kind of confused. A cause is something that leads you to have migraines in general. So, you know, it causes you to start having migraines for the first time and so forth. A trigger implies more to a headache attack. So what triggers a migraine might trigger an attack. Like, for example, if you get headaches around your menstrual cycle, it's probably the declining estrogen levels and other hormones that occur around the menstrual period that trigger that particular attack. Or if you get headaches with weather, you know, for example, so a low pressure system rolls in and you develop a headache when it rains, That's just triggering a given attack. Cause implies cause of the disease overall. So that's, there's a big, big difference between that. And what's interesting is that these diseases that people have can also increase the frequency and actually trigger headache attacks. It's either disease itself, or in some cases, it might be the therapies, you know, that they're on. Like they may be on different medications for a given disease, and it's possible that could trigger attacks. But we've been involved in some studies where that has shown that asthma, if you have asthma, you're more likely to go on and develop more frequent headaches. If you have depression, you're more likely to have go on and develop more frequent headaches. And then if you have pain, other pain disorders like neck pain, low back pain, that, you know, you can go on to develop other headaches. But there are also a variety of other triggers, like stress can trigger a given attack and so forth. So that is really interesting, is if you've got diseases and or their treatments that will actually make your headaches more frequent. To me, that's also another area that's very interesting to patients, is how these diseases make your headaches either more or less frequent.
Yeah, fascinating. I think it sounds like there's so many things going on when it comes to causes or triggers of migraine that explain the complexity of migraine and why it's so hard to maybe understand or in our community know what's potentially right for you, because it sounds like there's so many different things going on. There's not one core answer. I'd love to follow up that with a question from our community. Mike has asked whether there's an underlying root cause to migraine. What does the evidence say about that?
Well, I think we've talked about that. I mean, we talked about the three different buckets, the genetics, you know, that can either be a neurologic disease, neurologic gene mutations or vascular. We talked about the fact that other illnesses have most recently been found to be potentially causative for migraine. And we also talked about environmental factors. So I think that the idea of causality of migraine is a multifaceted question with multiple ways that you can generate migraine. So in a way, the migraine attack is kind of like just a way the brain responds to a variety of different things, whether it be a genetic cause or an environmental cause or even other illnesses. So it may not be just specific to this very narrow thought of migraine in the past, which is that migraine is solely a genetic neurologic disorder. That probably is just not true.
It does sound like there's so much that can feed into what migraine is and how this can present in different people with different conditions as well. I know there might be some people listening that know that they live with other comorbidities and it's hard to wrap your head around to understand and how that might influence how your migraine presents and what's right for you. What could you say to listeners that might be listening along and concerned about comorbidities and these research and findings and what's right for them?
Well, I think that the main way you might be able to look at this is through the effect of these illnesses as a trigger factor. Because in terms of cause, I'm not sure that if you develop one of these diseases, you know, if you're prone to those diseases and then those later then cause migraine, I don't know of any way to necessarily interrupt that process. But the trigger part of it, with where the diseases could trigger other illnesses, is very interesting. The way I approach seeing a migraine patient is I'm looking at trigger factors. So besides using all the migraine therapies that other people use, I'm looking at the patient saying, all right, what could be driving the increased frequency of their headaches? You know, do they have neck pain? So do they have like disease of their neck that's causing migraine headaches that occur back here? Do they have TMJ? So temporomandibular joint disease, where they get arthritis of this particular joint in the jaw, is triggering headaches here. Do they have a sinus or allergic disease that seems to be flaring at the time? And is that causing headaches located in the forehead, between the eyes, and also in the maxillary sinus region? Or are they having depression, which could be moderating things? Do they have hormones that are moderating things? So I'm looking for all these different trigger factors, and then I might modify them. So we might go after their neck pain. We might go after their TMJ. We might go after treating their sinus disease. We might go after treating their depression. There's different things we can do for hormonal triggers. So I'm looking at how these things might be increasing the frequency of headaches in a given patient.
Fantastic. So I guess by understanding that there might be other things going on, that could open up treatment options or understanding of what's going on and more, more options moving forward. I wonder if migraine and other conditions are so connected, does treating one help improve the other?
We don't know the answer to that, for example, but we do know that, say, treating with different nasal steroids or like little nasal sprays in the nose can reduce pressure in the sinus area, which I think in some cases might trigger headaches. We know that treating obstructive sleep apnea with something called CPAP, where you have a mask, can reduce the frequency of morning headaches. And in some cases, I think that may actually trigger migraines. There is some data on treating neck causes, the neck pain and arthritis of the neck and herniated discs in terms of referring pain up into the head that can trigger it. So we don't have a lot of data on treating other illnesses and the effect on migraine, but at least in my practice, it seems like if you can get the neck pain under control, if you can get the hay fever and allergies and or sinus disease under control, if you get the TMJ under control, or you can get the depression under control, that can make a big difference. We do know that if people are depressed with their migraines, they perceive the pain as much more severe than someone that's not depressed, and they also perceive it as much more disabling. So it has a much greater effect on their, you know, quality of life and also on what activities that they do. So I think we need to consider these diseases being interrelated, and one disease can make another worse, and sometimes it can go the opposite way. Like we know that depression often occurs before migraine develops, and migraine can develop before depression occurs. So you don't really know what's the chicken and the egg, but the reality is it's probably bi-directional. It's probably both of these diseases are interacting with one another. And we also know that if you treat migraine well, that depressive symptoms can improve. So treating migraine can sometimes improve other diseases.
I think that's a great message to send the folks listening at home, that there are some positive benefits that can come from disrupting that cycle or that interconnectedness of conditions and finding the right treatment for you. I'd love to follow up again. If migraine is systemic, how can that shape treatment approaches?
Well, I think that the treating clinician should think of treating other diseases outside of just migraine if they want to see maximal improvement in their patients, as we just discussed. Is treating the depression, treating the allergies and or rhinitis, treating the TMJ, treating the neck pain, you know, managing hormonal issues in women, you know, all these things can trigger attacks and those conditions can be improved. And in some instances, at least in my experience, that seems to also decrease the frequency of migraine.
We have another question from our community. Savannah is concerned about the long-term impacts of migraine, particularly as someone that's been living with migraine for a long time. What should people be aware of in terms of long-term effects?
Well, the long-term, there are a bunch of things. There's a lot of things we could talk about. One is migraine patients can get, you know, these white spots in the brain, you know, called white matter disease. And in fact, that occurs probably in my experience in about 40% of all migraine patients. There is some data to suggest that the more frequent the headaches, the more likely are you to get these white spots. And we're not sure exactly what it's called white matter disease. So we're not exactly sure what causes that. But one theory might be that the increased frequency of migraine may cause little areas of low blood flow into the brain, not strokes, but and that we don't know whether treating migraine or reducing frequency will reduce the likelihood of that. Certainly treating migraine can help, you know, depression, you know, for, you know, in individuals that suffer from both of those conditions. And that can be a long-term side effect of migraine. And that's probably the best way I can answer that particular question. There probably are other diseases that might improve with treatment of migraine as well, but maybe anxiety would be another one.
I'd love to ask you, someone that's listening along living with migraine right now, what's a key takeaway from understanding migraine as a systemic disease?
Key takeaway that you can't look at the brain in isolation. You know, just because you've got migraine and because at some point that neurologic system is activated, it doesn't mean that that's the only way that you manage migraine. You need to look at the whole body and develop treatment approaches in patients that might actually treat some of these other systemic illnesses, these other illnesses, because it might actually improve your migraines.
I'd love to ask you, you've been working in this space for such a long time, if you could design the next generation of migraine research with this systemic perspective, what would you prioritize? What would you like to see next?
I think that we're going to find that not every migraine is created equal. And I think that there very well could be a trigger factor. It's trigger factor therapy. So like, for example, if you have a menstrual migraine, so a headache occurs around your menstrual period, that may have a different way that that is triggered. There may be specific treatments that just interrupt that particular process. The same is probably true with a weather-triggered headaches. You know, like that. I think in the future that as we understand more of how these, whether they be other illnesses or whether they be environmental factors, or actually increasing migraine frequency, that we'll be able to intervene specifically to actually improve migraine. And the genetics is really interesting because there are so many different genes they're finding, you know, and there might be, if there's many different ways, there's many different roads to Rome, if you want to think of it that way. So migraine is just can be, you can get there many, many different ways. But once we find out the way that your migraines are being triggered, you know, or even caused, there might be very specific interventions that just pertain to your specific genetic defect, or your specific environmental trigger, or your specific internal trigger that causes the migraines. And I think a lot of the therapies now just act globally on the trigeminal system, but I think that much more targeted therapies that interrupt the process before it ever begins to prevent migraine is where the money's going to be in terms of research going forward.
Are there any other resources you'd like to recommend to our audience to learn a bit more about this topic?
Well, there's, you know, the National Headache Foundation has a variety of different videos and educational programs for persons with migraine. The American Migraine Foundation likewise has a lot of different handouts on migraine trigger factors and probably the causes. But a lot of this new stuff we're talking about migraine being a systemic disease, is just a new and evolving topic. So it's not one that even many headache doctors know much about.
Fascinating. So perhaps keep an eye on this space and we can learn more and more in the future.
Exactly.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. Martin. I know I've learned so much today and really valued this conversation and your expertise. It's fascinating to learn about the interconnectedness, the complexity, the causes, and all the other things going on in migraine beyond what we might initially think. So thank you for so eloquently breaking that down for us today. And thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.